Hello and welcome to the Daily Gopher SkyU podcast. With me today, I am U Street. With me today is Andy, Gopher Guy 05.
We got the axe back, baby.
Did get the axe back. And Blake, Iowa Gopher.
Happy to be here.
You should be happy to be here. In fact, generally, I think we're happy to be here. We're happy to have you with us as always. We're particularly happy this week because the University of Minnesota retains, as Andy mentioned, Paul Bunyan's axe. Andy, you were, in fact, one of our men on the ground in Madison, Wisconsin. Can you describe the Wisconsin postgame for us?
Yeah, you know, it was pretty fun. The one thing that we can all be bitter at with Wisconsin is they got rid of a lot of the really good places where fans can get down to the field since they did that whole, you know, multi-million-dollar redo of their end zone opposite the student section there. So that's all premium seating. So, you know, in 2018, we were down first row right there behind the end zone and could get up close. This one, you're basically shunted to the corners. So we were in a much less opportune place to both touch the axe and hang out with some of the players post game. But anyways, no, it was good. You know, it was the typical progression of, all right, do we got this? To, I don't know, to yes, to no, to, you know, we started out, we were up in the upper deck, and then right after the Brockington touchdown, we decided to head down, and we got down to the top of the lower concourse right as Wally got the interception, so we're like, okay, we're feeling good, and then we went down to one of the corners trying to think we'd get close to the tunnel, and we couldn't, and that's when Trickett missed the field goal. So then we ran over to one of the opposite corners, and we did get down pretty close to the field there and had a really good view in the corner of the end zone of the Wisconsin drive in the last, you know, 30 seconds or so. All four passes, you know, were right towards us. So, yeah, it was pretty good. It was, you know, an exciting feeling. You know, winning the axe is great. You know, a lot of the players' families seemed to be over by us. Trey Potts came over. Mario Sorimarin came over and actually hopped the fence to go up and give somebody a hug. Not more than about 5 or 10 feet from us. So, it's a lot of fun being on the ground when the Badgers win or when the Gophers beat the Badgers in Madison. You know, we now have got that twice in the last 4 years. So, yeah, I could get used to this feeling. I don't expect it's going to last, you know, 15, 16 years in a row like Wisconsin did to us. But I will take two straight road games we can be at where we shut out the Wisconsin fans and celebrate postgame.
Blake, I'm sure you want to talk a lot about the most important stat of the game, which was Mark Crawford averaging more than 40 yards a punt.
Well, first, I just want to say, just disappointed that Mariano Sorimarin didn't leap the into the stands and hug Andy. It's just, this was going to be his last opportunity to get that hug from Mariano Sorimarin since he graduated after the bowl game. But just disappointed in that, first and foremost. But yeah, Mark Crawford, I don't know what the best word to describe it is. He's just determined to be, you know, average. Just like you need 60-yard or 50-yard punt from him, you're going to get 40. If you need 30-yard punt from him, it's probably going to be, you know, 20. It's just, he's always just right below that bar of what you need. And it's just, it was an interesting game special teams-wise because they didn't do anything. The special teams didn't really do anything to help them, I'll say that. But then on defense, too, like you look at Wisconsin, they had 3 sacks and 8 tackles for loss, and Minnesota had 0 sacks and 0 tackles for loss, and yet Minnesota's defense fared better than Wisconsin's just because of explosive plays. Like you saw, like, you know, Ethan Kethick-Manis brought the passing game alive, and I think they had 4 pass catchers, all with at least, I think, three pass catchers each with like 86 yards receiving, which is unfathomable this season. With this team, so it's just, there's no such thing as a bad win over Wisconsin. Every win over Wisconsin is good. So I don't think, I mean, as Andy mentioned, they had a long winning streak over Minnesota. I don't remember any Wisconsin fans saying, oh, these games don't mean anything. They were talking it up. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, good win. I always take a win over Wisconsin. You know, as Andy said, it could have done without the chaotic final minutes that, although they did end sort of in comic fashion with I think it was 4 false starts by Wisconsin and a holding penalty. So I guess, you know, knowing the outcome,
it was an impressively poor showing from the Wisconsin players in regard penalties and things that they are not allowed to do on a field. You mentioned Ethan Calicmanis, who will presumptively be the Gophers' starting quarterback for as long as he's playing in college, based on the Tanner Morgan years that we've had so far. Calicmanis, you said 19-29 for 319, two touchdowns. Assess how excited you are for him leading the offense next year.
I mean, I don't think I've seen a passing performance like that since maybe Penn State, Tanner Morgan, and when, you know, he just kind of threw over the field to Tyler Johnson, Rashad Bateman. It was, especially for a redshirt freshman, it was just a fantastic performance. I think one play that really stood out to me was, I think it was early in the fourth quarter, maybe 2nd and 10, and, you know, I think Wisconsin had rushed 5, and two guys were bearing down on Ethan, and he just fired up one off into Brevin Spanford in the middle of the field, and a gain of like 15 yards. It just a throw like that off your back feet with rushers in your face is so impressive from a quarterback making his, I think, fourth career start. And I mean, also you also have to factor in the wide receiver performance. I mean, Dalen Wright had a great game. Daniel Jackson had, you know, that unbelievable catch down the sideline. You know, Brevin Spoor was, you know, finding that safety valve we were hoping he'd become in the passing game. He just had a lot of big catches in big moments and getting first downs and moving the chains. So, honestly, just a really, one of the most impressive quarterback performances we've seen in quite some time. And, you know, with all due respect to Tanner Morgan, we all know that his ceiling is limited, and Nathan's, you know, as far as physical gifts go, he's just has a higher ceiling than Tanner. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see this offense next season, especially without Muhammad Ibrahim, who's been, you know, kind of a once in a generation back. And I mean, I understand why the offense has leaned on him, because when you have a back like that, you can consistently get yards. Like, you're going to do that. But next season, I think they're going to need to be more balanced, and hopefully they'll just let Ethan sling it more than they have with Tanner Morgan.
Andy, I assume that you're here to, in addition to your normal regular slot on this podcast, that you're also here to apologize for being the reason why Mo's streak was finally broken at 70 yards. So I'm happy to hear you grovel about that. But also, as Blake mentioned, Mo has been a generational back in many ways. In your lifetime as a University of Minnesota fan, Andy, how many running backs do you think are better than he was?
Better. Wow, that's a tough one. You know, I think you could make the argument that it's possibly two, and that would be the double-headed Barber and Maroney attack of the early 2000s. Mo is just different, though. I mean...
Hold on, no Darrell Thompson, though?
Oh, I guess technically... If we're talking my lifetime, yes, Darrell Thompson was alive during my lifetime. My fandom, I'm DT was when I was like 7, so I guess okay. Fair enough. I do have to give DT a credit for that one. That one counts.
I incidentally do not put Darrell Thompson above Bo Ibrahim.
See, it's tough because I've got are random clips to look at Darrell. I never actually watched him play. I've just seen clips, so I can't accurately make a comparison. But Mo is just an entirely different back from both Barber and Maroney. The running styles are 100% different. I would make the argument that I can't think of another Gopher running back that has the vision of Muhammad Ibrahim. Just his ability to turn what 99% of the backs in the country would be losing 3 or 4 yards on into no gain or 2 yards. You know, I think we're gonna miss that significant ability next year, no matter who we have back there at running back, because none of the people on the roster, or even bring it in, probably have that type of talent just yet. But yeah, I mean, we've rid him down the stretch, and you can make the argument. I mean, the Gophers rode Maroney and Barber in that time period too. That, you know, he's put up numbers that nobody's seen. I mean, he's tied with Gary Russell right now for the touchdown record. I assume they're going to do absolutely everything they can to get him that 20th touchdown in the bowl game. You know, granted, Barber and Maroney were splitting carries a lot of the time, so nobody really had the chance to break that individual record. But no, I think you can very easily put up a Gopher running back in the modern era Mount Rushmore and throw Thompson, Maroney, Barber, and Mo on it, with, you know, Rodney Smith not far behind, and and you can, you know, Marion Barber II probably is up there as well, you know, before you go back to the early, you know, running backs, obviously Bruce Smith, et cetera. But if we're talking about, you know, the modern era of football, I think it's a fairly easy and obvious four to throw on there and go for running backs.
I agree with you that there hasn't been a running back outside of perhaps Barber and Maroney who had the vision that Mo does. And I think a lot of what encapsulates how impressive he's been is that because of his running style and because of his lack of, to be honest, just utter top end, you know, that seventh year, what differentiates him as a recruit? Why did he go to Minnesota as opposed to, say, Ohio State? Well, that was the reason. It's the reason why he was, I think, a three-star in high school instead of a four or a five-star. Just didn't have that kind of final burst. And that is unfortunate for his ultimate pro aspirations. But for the University of Minnesota, that lack of a top-end burst is probably the biggest gift that PJ Fleck's staff ever got. Because if he had that gear, he would have left 2 years ago. His vision of taking not just negative plays and turning them to 0-2 game, but taking 2 yard gains and turning it into 9, 10, 12. His ability to read the zone so well, some of that probably has been playing a long time in the same system, but just reading that outside zone so incredibly well and knowing not only this is where I'm putting my foot in the dirt for this cut, but also I'm going to cut in here as opposed to somewhere else. There are little pockets of space. His low running style, incredibly strong, such that it usually takes one to two dudes to just like sort of slow him up. And in order to tackle him frequently, it was 2, 3, 4. And if he got into the sort of secondary, got through the front seven, regularly 3 to 5 guys necessary to finally bring him down. That is an utterly special talent, and we are greatly gifted to see him. The record of 100 straight games with 100 yards is one of the most impressive running accomplishments I've seen in my lifetime, precisely because this Wisconsin game is a good example of just how hard it is to do that when everyone is keen in, as Blake mentioned. Blake, I'm not going to ask you to pine for Mo Ibrahim, but instead I would like you to pine for other players who received All Big Ten mentions. Which of these players do you think was slotted correctly, and who's been snubbed?
Well, I think I see Mohammed Ibrahim was accordingly made first team All Big Ten, along with John Michael Smith. I have no issue with any of those. I was a little bit surprised with the offensive line. I know I honestly wasn't expecting Axel Rutschmeyer or Chuck Filianga, both offensive guards, to make any of the teams. They both showed up in third team, and that's fine with me. Obviously, Aaron Terrasery and Quinn Carroll both made honorable mention. I think many Gopher fans would have issues with maybe Quinn Carroll being even honorable mention, but I'll leave that to them to discuss. I think the one most surprising ones is probably Brevin Spann-Ford being All Big Ten honorable mention. He was, you know, for much of the year, probably he lost the lead in receptions by the end of the year, Daniel Jackson, but to me he was just their most consistent target in the passing game. I mean, even when they didn't have much of a passing game, the balls were going to him. I think the reason he probably ended up in honorable mention is a product of, you know, Minnesota going away from the passing game so frequently and not targeting him enough. It is what it is. I don't think it's an egregious snub. I would have liked to have seen him maybe at a minimum third team. I don't know, second team might have been pushing it. I'm probably obviously very biased, but that's just the way it is. Then that's the offensive side of the ball. On defense, we had Tyler Newbin, who made second team All Big Ten. That's fine. That's fine. There's probably better safeties, probably bigger, more eye-popping numbers in the Big Ten for first team. So second team is fine. Marin was third team by the coaches. They had 9 different Gophers made honorable mention. I think the one that I would have liked to have seen maybe third team is cornerback, you know, Terrell Smith. I thought he had an outstanding year. He was just quietly awesome, for lack of a better word. And like, you know, I've talked on the blog before about his story. Like, he, you know, stuck it. He was a freshman starter, kind of lost the starting position a couple different times throughout his career, but stuck it out, came back for a fifth year, and I think possibly played his way into an NFL roster spot, maybe even a late round draft pick. So would have liked to have seen him recognized, but yeah, I guess we can't have everything. But yeah, really beyond that, I was overall pretty satisfied with the selections. I would just like to have seen more love maybe for Brevin Spanford or Terrell Smith.
Yeah, I mean, for Smith, he also earned a invite to the East-West Bowl earlier today, so he'll be in one of those, you know, postseason scouting games. I do think he has a lot of Chris Williamson in him, just, you know, senior year riser, really sort of showing off. And, you know, Williamson, if you remember, ended up sneaking into the seventh round, getting selected by the Giants. Now, he didn't really do much for an NFL career. But, you know, I think he could be one of those players that were sort of like, you know, fringe and could sneak into the late rounds. I'm going to disagree a little bit when you look at some of the numbers for Brevin Spanford. I think he got more than screwed. I think he probably deserves that 13th spot. You know, who knows what numbers people are looking at when they're voting. And I think Blake's probably right when, you know, he probably didn't get as much interest just because of the Gophers' passing game. But the fact, if you look at the run blocking, PFF run blocking grades, I think Spanford is the best run blocking tight end in the Big Ten. Now, admittedly, nobody's going to look at that. It's not flashy, but for a tight end, that's an important part of a game. You're not, you know, you're not a wide receiver looking at your run blocking. Tight ends are expected to block. So I think that's you know, a really undervalued part of his game that could have come. And then if you look at who did get named to that third team, you know, that's when I'm sure people are just like, well, let's just randomly look. It was the Ohio State tight end, it was the Michigan State tight end, or Michigan tight end, it was the Penn State tight end. That's where I think you started getting the helmets getting the advantage of the voting rather than Spanford, who probably actually deserved it. But I don't want to sound too much like an Illinois fan here complaining and nitpicking, because, I mean, in the long run, maybe it motivates Spanford to come back for one more season rather than try the NFL this year and come back and try and win first team honors in 2023.
Well, to that point, he did not participate in senior day for the Iowa game, which would suggest he's leaning towards coming back next year, but obviously he can change his mind and doesn't have to participate in senior day to come back. But I hope, I mean, the preview we've gotten of the passing of Ethan Calliope-Manis is obviously very exciting. There's no guarantee that's going to translate into, you know, a 12 game season next year with kind of a new starting offensive line and everything that goes into, you know, changing of the guard year over year. But yeah, I think if the passing game had just been more consistent throughout the year, he might have gotten more attention. You know, he only ended up with just a couple touchdowns and I think 400 some receiving yards. But yeah, I think you need to kind of hit on the nail on the head when they get to third team. It's just like, who can we throw in there?
Well, you've reached the end of the regular season. Minnesota this year finished tied for second, finished 5-4, so they won't actually finish second with all of the tiebreakers, but overall record finished tied for second. Win one game at either Iowa or Purdue, tie for first and go through. Last season, they also finished tied for second. COVID year aside, year before that, they finished tied for first in the conference. They've yet to represent the division because they consistently are losing on tiebreakers. For both of you, and we can start with Blake here, how do you think of this season in terms of overarching success? Do you think it's success? Do you think it's a disappointment? And if you think it's a disappointment, how do you explain to your Gopher-loving fan of yourself of, say, 12 years ago, that you should be really disappointed finishing second in the division?
I just don't think this program is in a position to take 8-1 seasons for granted. And I think two things can be true. I think you can say it was a good season, but a disappointing season. Like, they, you know, they left some meat on the bone. There were missed opportunities. Obviously, you know, you think particularly of the Purdue game, the Iowa game. If they just win that Purdue game, they're in the Big Ten championship. Obviously, I mean, we all know how I feel at the Iowa game. That one's going to haunt me for at least another year. So the less said about that, the better. But, you know, people pointed out too, well, you know, you won 8 games, but you didn't beat anybody with a winning record. You know, best win was 6-6 Wisconsin. That's fine. I mean, you at least want to beat the teams that you should beat, which they did. And I mean, they just didn't beat the good teams. And I mean, that's when you're 8-4, that's kind of the deal. But then at the end of the day, they finished above 500 in the Big Ten, which is not nothing. They, you know, as you mentioned, they finished tied for second with Illinois and Iowa in the division. Overall, I mean, it's just, I would say it's a sad, it's a good season, but I mean, you just left a little dissatisfied with those missed opportunities. But yeah, I think in that one, and to end it with a win against Wisconsin, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, there's no such thing as a bad win over Wisconsin, so it's always good to kind of end the season on a positive note and take them down. And then with the bowl game, you have a chance at a ninth win, which is, you know, they finished 9-4. That's to me like an objectively good season. I think we're just not in a position to take that for granted at this point.
Andy, as Blake mentioned there, the Gophers are going to go to a bowl game. I'm interested in your thoughts, of course, on the season as well, but I'm also interested, after you provide your thoughts, on how excited everyone should be about the Pinstripe Bowl, which seems to be the most likely landing place as we record this on the 30th of November.
Yeah, no, if I had to give a letter grade to the season, it'd probably be a solid B. You know, overall, it was pretty good, had high moments, had low moments, and, you know, as you said, you know, you look at it back 10 years ago and you're like, how are we supposed to feel bad about it at 8-4 regular season? But when you just look deeper and realize how close we were to getting over that hump for the second year in a row, just, you know, a few less idiotic plays, a few, you know, one less injury, if Moe's not hurt for the Purdue game, you know, it's one of those things where you recognize that things went really well, but you recognize that, you know, you're just inches away from getting over that hump, and yet you keep getting to the top before sliding back down. So hopefully one of these years we can get over it, although obviously with the realignment, things get considerably harder here after next year, and next year the schedule does us no favors. So, you know, it's definitely going to be a steep climb for the Gophers to get back in the position where they were the last 2 years, but, you know, hopefully P.J. Fleck can continue to change his best and grow, and we can continue to climb upwards and get the Gopher fans what they really want one of these years. As you said, speaking about bowls, the most interesting thing coming out of the, you know, the week before the bowl assignment, where everybody's sort of lobbying and swapping, is that it sounds like currently Ohio State, who's ranked fifth in the college football playoff rankings, has pretty much gone to the Rose Bowl and said, you should not pick us. The Buckeyes were in the Rose Bowl last year and apparently didn't sell out their allotment, and they're really worried that had they gone back to Pasadena this year, that would be even worse. So it sounds like Penn State, again, assuming Ohio State doesn't back their way into the playoff, which is still a possibility, Penn State will take the Rose Bowl slot, and Ohio State will move to the Orange Bowl. By doing that into the weird bowl calculus that everybody fits with their assigned slots and stuff like that, the Big Ten loses their slot to the bowl formerly known as the Outback Bowl, that's now the ReliaQuest Bowl, to either Notre Dame or an ACC team. So basically, it was an argument going into the, you know, after the Wisconsin win, that, you know, Minnesota had a good shot at the Duke's Mayo Bowl, or maybe even the Music City Bowl, and, you know, it would just basically take leapfrogging an Illinois team or something like that to get to a little bit nicer bowl. Now, when the Big Ten loses one of their, you know, peon bowl slots, not one of their top ones, it shoves everybody back. And you've got to figure that Purdue, by winning the West, is probably slotted into the remaining New Year's Day Florida Bowl, so they'll go to the Citrus Bowl. So then basically it comes down to Duke's Mayo between and Music City, probably between Illinois or Iowa, although I saw, I think the Big Ten really wants to get Maryland into that Duke's Mayo slot so they can play one of their former ACC rivals in that game. But long story short, Minnesota is damn near locked into the Pinstripe. When the Big Ten extended the contract with the Pinstripe Bowl through 2025, they intended to try and continue to keep in the language that the Pinstripe was to take a new team for each year of the contract. This is apparently year 8 of the contract, and they've been 7 different teams in there before. So if you look at the teams that in theory are in the right zone to go to a potential bowl, that pretty much leaves Minnesota and Illinois as the only two possibilities. The trick being is you can't drop Minnesota further back because they were in the Guaranteed Rate Bowl last year, so that bowl is not open for Minnesota. So then you're not going to have Wisconsin leap them after the Gophers beat Wisconsin. So I think, you know, looking objectively, I think Minnesota is pretty much locked into heading to New York City for a 1 p.m. kickoff on Thursday, December 29th against a ACC school, which, if you look at all the projections that have come out this week, appears it's going to probably be the Syracuse Orange.
Can we talk about how much of a downgrade it is to go from the Outback Bowl to the ReliaQuest Bowl? I mean, that's so depressing.
Yeah, no, it's a brutal name change. I mean, obviously, bowls have had illustrious name changes history, and yeah, going from the Outback and the coconut shrimp and the Bloomin' Onion and all that to, I don't even know what the hell ReliaQuest is, to be brutally honest. I have no idea if they're like an investment firm, if they're a real estate firm. I have no clue at all.
I'll tell you right now, I'm never going to do business with them. I don't know what they do. I don't care what it comes to. Based on this alone, I will never do business with them because they changed. They took away my Outback Bowl.
I can tell you what ReliaQuest is. And for our listeners, we are not sponsored by them. Though to ReliaQuest, we are happy to be sponsored by you. They are a cybersecurity company that delivers predominantly threat detection, investigation, and response. They are based out of Tampa, Florida. So either that should make you very, very excited about their ability to detect threats, or very not. If you've ever been to Tampa, could go either way.
At least it's not Orlando.
I'll take the threats. I'll take the threats. I don't need detection. No, I'll take it.
The one thing that will be interesting when all the bowls come out on Sunday is if you're into the Schadenfreude, there is one definite potential if Maryland gets to stay at the Duke's Mayo game because they want that potential sellout in Charlotte against an ACC school. Illinois is probably going to do what happened to Minnesota last year, where they probably should have been to at least a bowl two or three tiers better, but they're going to end up in Phoenix in the Guaranteed Rate Bowl. And if you thought the Illinois fans were mad online about Chase Brown being snubbed for first team All Big Ten for Mo Ibrahim, when Minnesota goes to a bowl two tiers better than them, it's going to be fun to read. I'm not going to lie.
Andy, always here for the Schadenfreude of Illinois fans and the ability to say words in German. The Gophers are going to the postseason in football, but the Gophers are also going to the postseason in volleyball. Blake has no idea what I'm talking about, but fortunately Andy does. Andy, can you give us a very quick breakdown of sort of early rounds that the University of Minnesota will be playing in volleyball?
Yeah, so the NCAA tournament bracket was announced last Sunday night, and the Gophers, probably by virtue of two huge road wins last weekend at top 10 ranked Ohio State and Nebraska, really solidified their spot. They ended up getting the number 8 national seed, the number 2 seed in the Texas bracket, Texas the number 1 overall seed, who defeated the Gophers 3-1 earlier in the year in Austin. But Minnesota, as the number 2 seed in that bracket, the number 8 overall, gets to host the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament at the PAV this weekend. So Minnesota opens with the Southeast Louisiana something Eagles. I honestly don't know. The Southeast Louisiana is the winner of the Southland Conference. They've played absolutely nobody. If Minnesota does not win that one 3-0 in rapid fashion, they should probably be worried. Assuming they win that one, they then will play in the second round Saturday night against the winner of Florida State or Northern Iowa, that game being earlier Friday at the PAV. All three games will air on ESPN Plus. So if you're looking for the action this weekend, Friday night and Saturday night, ESPN Plus is where you'll find it. Assuming Minnesota advances and assuming Texas holds serve, which they should, the Gophers would head down to Austin next weekend for the round of 16 and a potential rematch for the third time this year against the third seed in that region, the Ohio State Buckeyes, looms in the round of 16. One other note, the Big Ten announced their awards for volleyball as well. Taylor Landfair, was named the Big Ten Player of the Year. That makes it 3 years in a row that the Gophers won the award after Stephanie Samity won back-to-back the last two. Lanfear, the redshirt sophomore, came off of an injury. She's been injury prone the last couple of years, and she absolutely killed it this year for the Gophers. Led the Big Ten in both points and kills per set. 26 10 plus kill matches. Really, really good. She was joined on the first team by setter Melanie Schaffmaster and middle blocker freshman Carter Booth. CC McGraw, the Gophers libero, was named to the second team. And then Booth and fellow freshman McKenna Woosher were both named to the All Big Ten freshman team. So lots of awards for the Gopher volleyball team here today in the conference. And hopefully they can keep the momentum from last weekend going here and send Hugh McCutcheon out of the PAV with a pair of wins this weekend before heading down to Austin, Texas to try and see if the Gophers can get back to the Final Four.
If you have the ability to go, definitely recommend it. It's a very fun atmosphere. Certainly postseason anything is a fun time. It's been a fun time hanging out with these fellas. It's been a fun time hanging out with you. Make sure to check out the Daily Gopher for not just your postseason volleyball facts, but is also basketball, which is heating up. And we're choosing not to talk about because they have not been very good on both the men's and the women's side, as well as a variety of other winter sports. And of course, additional football-related content. Until then, go Gophers, Sky U Ma, row the boat.
Go Gophers, row the boat.